Okay, today is December 3rd, 2015. This is the fourth, perhaps final interview with Lamar, Lamar Campbell. Lamar goes by Soup. Mm-hmm. My name is Troy Reeves with the UW Mass General History Program. So, Soup, as we've done on all the other ones, will you say your name and spell your last name?
Yes, Lamar Campbell, C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L.
Okay. Soup, I want to start off with life after the game. Mm-hmm. So I know we're both, you said earlier you're a comic book guy, I'm a comic book guy. I'm always interested in origin stories, so
right.
If you want to tell the origin story of Life After the Game, and maybe we'll go from there.
Yeah, definitely. I think Life After the Game for me really started in the NFL locker room. I noticed that a lot of the guys in the locker room, for whatever reason, had not finished their degrees. And it was curious to me how many of us had went to very academically focused on academics as far as the universities. Of course, the Big Ten, Wisconsin, the Michigans, the Alabamas, the Floridas, the University of Miami, the Stanfords, the USCs. Mm-hmm. And even those that had redshirted and played 5 years had not finished their degree. Also, as a student athlete as well, I understood the time constraints. I also understood that sometimes working on your master's or working on an undergraduate in a limited amount of time. When you understand the schedules of student athletes and being a student athlete, you pretty much class schedule has to run between 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. You look at most class schedules, the university is not going to change a class because you're an athlete. So if they offer a class at 3:30, they offer a class at 4 or 7 at night, you're not going to be able to take it because you have responsibilities here to the university and your athletic field. So that kind of limits a lot of the majors that a lot of the athletic, well, at least the football guys can. Every sport has a different time frame and different demands as far as what their practice schedule is and how their season works. And I think that sometimes puts us in a bubble where only certain majors are attainable based on the time frame that we have. Now, there are the spring semesters and there are the summer semesters as well, but you still have certain responsibilities there as well. So your athletic responsibilities sometimes don't always coordinate with the academic responsibilities and also just the time frame in itself. And I think that's something that I learned just talking to guys in the locker room. A lot of times when we left the NFL, there were a lot of things that just weren't unsaid, a lot of opportunities there that we didn't know of. Right now, the Big Ten was the first school last year to offer guaranteed 5-year scholarships, mm-hmm. where no matter when you left, if you left in good academic standing, you could come back and finish mm-hmm. your degree. Mm-hmm. That was not always the case. It was not the case when I was in school as well. And I think now nationally, that's been adopted by most of the Power 5 conferences, which I think is important. I'm on a grant program here through the NFLPA, NFL Trust Program, and NFL also offers a program to go back to school as well. So I think where Life After the Game came from is when the game was over for me. My family came from real estate. I had invested in real estate. But I also realized that a lot of times, this was before the age of life skills in my position now. We have 6-person staff here, which is actually large. And most, I challenge that anywhere in the country to find a staff as large as ours to focus on player development and life skills. Whereas in my day, we didn't have these things to prepare for. You know, congratulations, great job at Wisconsin. Good luck. We hope to see you around an alumni event. And it wasn't anything that was bad. That was just a norm in all college athletics, not just here. So I want to make it feel as though it was something that we did here. That was just a norm everywhere in college athletics. Now I think it's important to have that transitional piece, whether it's leaving high school to college, leaving college to the NFL, or leaving the NFL to corporate America. You're just not going to play, you know, you're going to do something for the rest of your life. You're not going to play football forever. So to have those opportunities. So being in that situation myself and making mistakes that I made, kind of Life After the Game became an opportunity for me to not get on the soapbox, but actually speak on the things that I did incorrectly or some of the mistakes or some of the most importantly, some of the things that I didn't take advantage of just by not having skin in the game and not looking to see what was available to me and make sure that this next generation of players, whether it's high school, collegially, or professionally, have that information to make sure that their transition is successful.
So did that start, was that early in the tens, I guess we call it?
Yeah, them? Yeah, okay. Early in the tens, yeah.
And so you were in Atlanta at that time?
I was in Atlanta at that time, okay. Yes.
So is it been primarily a consulting firm?
Consulting firm. So I mentioned earlier, you know, I mentioned to our student athletes now, charity is such a huge component. I've always been, as the theme has been in this entire org history, it's always bigger than me. So being able to give back. And coincidentally, I mentioned that, you know, I met the CNN producer at a charitable event. And it pretty much branched off from there. I consulted with the NCAA at numerous universities doing social media etiquette transition. Also with the NFL, the NBA, and one Major League Baseball team. Okay. So it's more of a consulting. This was at the time where, as I mentioned earlier, player development and life skills was just really in its infancy stages. So a lot of people didn't have someone on staff to actually do that. So I would come in and fill that role a couple of days at a time throughout the year in that capacity.
Okay, so when you were talking earlier and how you have been talking about consulting, that was under the aegis of life after the game.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And that's still ongoing?
Still ongoing.
Even when you're here?
Even when I'm here. I mean, the difference is that now I'm 100% committed to the University of Wisconsin-Offaly. I'm on staff now. I don't know what the future holds for me after my degree here, but what I think, and I tell the students all the time, is that being here on the ground, the problem with life after the game, if you want to call it a problem, was that I wasn't there throughout the year. I would be there for 3 days maximum, and then I was on to the next university. As you know, 17 to 20-year-old kids, retention is not as high. They have a lot of things going on, especially the student athletes, so I was not there every day to reinforce some of the lessons that I would come in and speak to them about. Being here on the ground every day with the student athletes, I get to actually speak to them every day and make sure that they're always thinking and always focusing on what their transition may be and what their next step may be, and actually thinking outside the box. I would even take it to the point of thinking like there is no box, and make sure that you have all your bases covered. And I think I tell them all the time, I learn as much from them as they learn from me. I learn from them every day. I learn what they need. I learn what they're not getting. I learn what their aspirations are, and I kind of learn, you know, what the state of the current student athlete is. And I think that does nothing but benefit whatever I decide to do once I leave my time here in Madison.
One more thing about life after the game. I found out about it, well before we did this oral history from your Twitter feed. So why was it, or maybe even is it, important for you to have a social media presence with your consulting?
I think for me, to have that presence on social media, I think I'm old enough, and I say this as I'm old enough to where the older guys respect me, but I'm also young enough to where the younger kids know that I'm kind of hip to what's going on right now. And even here in Madison, I do a social media etiquette course for all incoming freshmen on Instagram and Snapchat, because what I would fail to realize at that age, and thank God we didn't have Twitter or Facebook or any of that when I was in college or in the NFL, because I don't know if I'd be, you know, it probably would have caused some problems for me. And just to make sure that they know now, with the world being as viral as it is and social media, that once you come on campus and with social media, what you start to do is you start to build or you start to destroy your social capital. I tell kids all the time, you come in here as a freshman, and by the time you're a sophomore, a junior, a senior, and I'm looking to get you an internship, or I'm looking to make an opportunity for you, I'm putting my integrity on the line. You're putting the integrity of the university on the line, what it means to wear the W. And I would hate to get a phone call that say, hey, Soup, we can't hire this young man or this young woman because of their social media and some of the things that they put on there. So this is what jobs do now. This is what corporations do. They actually, the average that I heard from a friend of mine, just like universities have people that manage social media, companies have that as well. And they offer, and they, they average about 10 to 15 fires a month based on things people have said on social media, whether it be Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram, what have you. So why destroy your opportunity as a student athlete to have a great career for yourself by doing something stupid on your social media presence? So I think for me, it sets an example. As much as I say think before you tweet, we are, you know, in a battle of logic versus emotion. Logic should win. Sometimes emotion does. And you may put something out there that may not be. But once you put it out there, now with the power of screenshots, once it's out there, it's out there. And if you have someone following you, they're screenshotted, and there's no delete to that.
Thank you for all that, Soup. I want to move on now to what we started to get to when we finished last time, and that's coming back here to get your degree and now being here on campus getting your master's degree. So just logistically to start off with, what was the process of enrolling and actually getting back into class to finish up your undergraduate degree?
It happened pretty fast. Once I made a decision, I knew I wanted to come back to school. I definitely had the support of people here in Madison. The first thing I think I did is I called Coach Alvarez, now athletic director Alvarez, and I let him know that I wanted to come back to school to finish my undergraduate degree. Soup, you should come back and finish your undergraduate degree. You know, come on back. It was a pretty heavy load. You know, I was traveling back and forth once a month. I knew I was going to have to do that. I was keeping a place in Atlanta and having to rent out a place here. And then even scheduling my classes. Because I was here so long ago, the curriculum had changed. If I'd have came right back, I maybe had to take 7 or 8 credits because the curriculum had changed. I had to take 16. So what I ended up doing is taking a summer course at Georgia State while I was in Atlanta. So when I came back here, it was a 4-credit course. So when I came back here, I would only have 12 credits to take once I got back on campus. And then working with both academic institutions to make sure that those 4 credits would not only transfer, but that they would be worth 4 credits here in Madison. Mm-hmm. So going through a lot of that. And then the move here, moved here on my birthday twice, back here for grad school and undergrad, came on the 29th. Start a school that week and just getting back into the groove of things. You know, you're in school for a week and they go see your advisor. I'm a history major. Mm-hmm. So I went to go see my advisor and realized there were 2 classes that I was actually enrolled in that I should not be enrolled in. Mm-hmm. I should be actually enrolled in 2 other classes, which mm-hmm. is how I met Professor Prof D. Actually got enrolled in his class, and Brenda Plummer, who's civil rights history in the mm-hmm. history department as well. So I dropped 2 classes and got into those right classes. Definitely, and thankfully, in time right. to get back on track to graduate, and that's December.
So that's, do you think that's part and parcel of being a non-traditional student and doing the work that you've done, that you knew it was probably a good idea to check in and make sure, check in early and make sure that you were...
measure twice, cut once. Mm-hmm. you know, is making sure, because it's funny, I'm sitting in the music class. I have music 101, and I thought, well, I was filling an elective that I needed from my freshman year. Remember, I was finishing those 12 credits that I really struggled with my first semester here. And I said, you know, something just didn't feel right. It just seemed a little too easy. I said, I'm coming back to graduate. I got 12 credits. This class seemed a little too easy. So I went and double checked with my history advisor. He's like, nah, Soup, kind of need these 2 classes, not these 2. So I was able to drop in. He made a call for me to, which was a great favor for me. And just showed a support system. One professor Dennis's class was actually filled, and he made some room for me in that class, to get into that class to graduate, and he got me into Professor Plummer's class as well too. So I definitely want to focus on the importance of having an academic or advisory staff that is very detailed and very invested in the graduation of a student. It's not just student athletes.
Mm-hmm. So. Maybe take me through just as quickly as you want. So, first off, what were the 4 credits that you took at Georgia State? What
astronomy.
Oh, wow.
Astronomy class, which was amazing. Honestly, he was a great professor. It was obviously it was a summertime. It was accelerated. I had always I've always been as a history nerd. I've always been big on Discovery Channel and Neil deGrasse Tyson and all those kind of shows. So for me, it was very interesting to learn just the details of astronomy and astrology. Actually going and looking through the large telescopes and actually being able to go outside now and actually recognize a constellation. Mm-hmm. You know, in Atlanta, the stars aren't as bright as they are here in Madison. Madison has one, and people say, why do you say Madison has beautiful nights? It's just so clear. Mm-hmm. You don't have the city lights. You don't have everything blocking in. On a clear night, you can see all the constellations and all the stars. When I learned is based on your where you are in the country, you're going to see different constellations. It's going to be completely different on what you can and can't see. Or depending, I would say their location in the sky. Mm-hmm. So that was something that I brought here to Madison. And every once in a while, when the red moon happened a couple of weeks ago, I was a month or so ago, I was very excited about that and actually understood what it meant that it was a red moon happening. Mm-hmm. So it was cool.
That's great. And then your 12 credits you took to get your degree here.
Yes. I took civil rights history with Brenda Plummer, history of sports with Professor Dinses, stats, And I had to battle my biggest demon. I had to do math 101 again. When I bombed my freshman semester. Now, I hadn't done algebra since that freshman year. I had never touched a math class. So I would say 70% of last year, I was teaching myself how to do algebra again. Because what happens now, because of the lack of funding in the school, they actually teach math on a computer, which is doesn't make sense to me. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm being an old guy. Maybe I'm not sure how old I am. But teaching math on a computer didn't really make a lot of sense to me. Mm-hmm. I think you were really not teaching it. You know, when you have a PowerPoint and you're actually just showing people the problems instead of going through the problems, that was somewhat different to me and made it very, very difficult for someone that hadn't done math in 20 years.
Mm-hmm. But you made it.
Yeah, I made it. Made it.
So you graduated in December, so a year ago, basically.
A year ago, yeah.
And what were your plans then? So what were you thinking at that point?
I knew based on my working life after the game, and I knew I wanted to get back into collegiate athletics. My goal was to get into collegiate athletics back in Atlanta to be closer to my son and my family. However, it's a very competitive market. I had great connections, and I think I spoke about this earlier the last time that we sat down. It matters that you have a degree. It matters you have a lot of letters, PhD, MBA, MA behind your name, but if you didn't have the experience, it's very hard to get hired in this field. So it was just an opportunity for me to really put a game plan together on how to get that experience. Yes, I had been on campus with my life after the game. Yes, I had these accolades of working with the NFL and the NFL draft and the NBA and the MLB, but I had never been in the situation where I was in the front office and actually had to work at it every day, and I think that was important to my goal of where I wanted to go. And it just so happened that chance meeting through the grant program that I'm in right now with the NFLPA, they took it to the N4A conference, which is a collegiate conference during the summer. And just happened to run into our head academic person here, Mark Shook, who came from Bowling Green. He goes, "Sue, what are you doing here?" I said, "Oh, well, Mark, you know, I had just met him last year. It was his first year here. And I was trying to get back into collegiate athletics. I was looking at possibly, you know, pursuing a master's degree." That's when he mentioned the ELPA program to me. That's when he mentioned the Big Ten Minority Internship, which I'm actually here on now. And he said, "You know, Beth, definitely apply. We'll see where it goes from there." So I applied to the master's program here, applied for the grant from the NFLPA, and after some work with Mark and Doug and some guys here, and the support of the university, I was able to come back here and start to get the experience I think that I need and desperately wanted to pursue my goals as well.
So I assume you had to have a discussion with your son again about...
Yes, very difficult.
I would guess, telling him or talking to him about coming back for a semester is different than talking to him about coming back
for a master's.
Mm-hmm. How did you have that conversation?
It was very difficult. I think one of the good things is that our relationship has always been very open. Me and his mother always focused on being honest with him, understanding his age, but also made sure that we were very transparent in his life as co-parents. Mm-hmm. So transparency was huge. He understood based on what happened last year. Technology made it a lot easier. One of the gifts I got him was his first laptop, so we can actually Skype and every night or every other night. So it makes it a little easier, but nothing. That was one of I thought it was a difficult discussion when I came back for grad school, but not as much because I knew I was going to be gone for 4 months. Mm-hmm. I was still back once a month, still spent the Christmas, still spent Thanksgiving. You figure I left in August. I was back in September, October, all Thanksgiving, and then Christmas break, I was back.
Right.
So really, it didn't last that long. Now we're at the stage now where we just came back from Thanksgiving break, and it was much needed. For that, because I think it really hit me that this is going to be longer than my undergraduate experience, which has me focused and to finish my master's degree as soon as possible. I'm not taking 2 years. I plan on being finished December of next year with my master's. So sooner that I'm done, the sooner I'll be able to get back to him and get back to Atlanta, but also letting him know it's good for me for him to see this. He was able to come back to graduate. He came up for graduation last year. He was able to see that. I preach to him, finish what you start. I preach to him, education. I preach to him. He's a lot more privileged than I was. So his school district is great, as I mentioned earlier. He has a lot of things going for him that are in his path that I want him to not take for granted, but understand the opportunity in front of him. And that's how I told him about grad school. It was an opportunity not only for me to further my education, but also create a better life for myself, and most importantly, him.
Mm-hmm. So, Soup, can you compare, you know, last year, the 12 credits you took to get undergrad, and now, you know, you're most of the way through your first fall semester
Yes.
in grad school. So could you compare the experience first academically?
Academically? Definitely. Hell yeah. It was, I wouldn't have took stats if I didn't have to. And I definitely wouldn't have took Math 101 if I didn't have to. Mm-hmm. The history courses, as we mentioned, I think in one of my first interviews, because I was a history nerd, they were very easy. I got great grades in that. And believe it or not, I got an A in stats as well, which was a math class, but it was more speculation, more thinking outside the box in math, so not necessarily numbers. And I did well in that as well. That was a struggle. I think now in master's, and it's come up in a lot of our classes this semester, and even pitch, what can we do to make undergraduate more like a master's program where you actually study what you're interested in? You don't have to go through prerequisite courses that you may not be interested in. You know, I don't struggle with grad school. The work is a lot more strenuous, a lot more reading, a lot more detail. But when you're loving what you do, you look at it completely differently. I dreaded going to math. Last December, I dreaded it. I took it as a challenge. But the experience has just been great. I think the open forums of discussion in graduate school are completely different from undergraduate. And I think that's something I can go back to Professor Plummer over in Civil Rights History, that she had these open questions and she had this open forum and we had open conversations about what was going on in the world. And I thought that racially, speaking about civil rights and being here in Madison and some of the things that she's done, there was a lot of racial tensions last year coming back here. There had been a lot of police tension and African-Americans, and what I think we saw last year was a lot of the rhetoric was not hidden anymore about how people felt about racism in this country, whether good or bad, for unity or against it. And I think you heard a lot of rhetoric last year, and I think it became very transparent how people felt. I tried not to get into politics. When I got into journalism, one of the first things they told me was no politics and no religion. But I think when I left last year and you hear what Governor Walker tried to do to the Wisconsin idea, and you think about what this university is and what it was founded on, and some of his views with Wisconsin being one of the worst states, if I'm sorry, the worst state for African-American males in the country, it was very surprising to me. And those are some of the conversations that we have, some of the conversations that we still have today in class. And I think those open forums for conversation, while they may open a wound, They also open opportunities to heal as well, too, because if you can be respectful, and we're talking about being respectful and being able to people to voice their opinions in a respectful way, understanding different viewpoints on things, it's an opportunity. So I'm very passionate. I think I've become more passionate about education as I've been in the master's program, just because of the way that it's delivered, but also the conversational pieces that happen within those confines. And if you're lucky enough to have a professor that'll take you to a march on Bascom Hill, that's right outside the education building, protesting equality based on what happened in Missouri with the football team. And the professor says, you know what, we're not going to go to class tonight. We're going to go experience this. We're going to go see what this is like. We're going to see why it's important. And people come back to class and they're crying because they've never experienced anything like that, or they've never seen people stand again. They kind of hit them like, this is very important. It kind of goes back to the point that a lot of people are just ignorant. They don't. It's not that they just don't care. They just never experienced it. And I think for me, coming back, growing up that way, growing up with a corrupt police department, growing up knowing that murders were covered up, growing up knowing that you were always assumed guilty because you were an African-American male, I think growing up that way and speaking with people that didn't made our classroom extremely tight. I mean, we're very close friends. We don't see color, I think, at this point. We just see what's right, what's wrong, and what's our opinions. And I love that. And I love that experience here.
Maybe a couple more things. So first, let me check here. Yeah, we got a few more minutes. What does a typical day look like now that you're in grad school and working for athletics?
Oh, wow. Typical. They change day, but I'll give you a typical day. So I have classes on Monday nights and Thursday nights. So Monday nights, I'm in class from 4 to 10 p.m. And Thursday nights, I'm in class from 7 to 10 p.m. My normal day starts, I'm usually walking into the gym at 5:30 in the morning. I'm still an athlete. I still wake up early. I wake up with the birds, as my grandmother would say. I like to get an early start. That's always been something I've always liked to do. And I usually walk here in my office about 7 a.m. And I'm usually exchanging emails. I'm just setting up course plans. We have a lot of meetings during the week, a lot of programs. Wisconsin, we offer 160 life skills programs a year to our student athletes. So we're consistently working on not only working on those programs, but speaking with our student athletes to develop new programs that'll be beneficial to them as well. We have our meetings. I'm usually here on the job from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. before I head to class. On a typical Tuesday, it's the same thing up until 5 o'clock. I have student athletes. I have the rowing team, the men's and women's rowing team, as my team contact. So every student athlete coordinator here has a team that they work with directly. I have about 80 young women rowers, and I have about 35 male rowers, and they come through on a consistent basis. As you can see, I just filled my candy dish because Thursday and Fridays are usually my busiest day. So I try to have some sweets for them and just try to help make sure that they're navigating college correctly. They're navigating and not making the same mistakes that we made. And I'm usually here studying till 10 o'clock at night. When the student athletes leave, that's when I leave, and it's 5 o'clock the next morning, I'm back up. Very regimented schedule.
And then what does a weekend look like then?
During the football season, it's a little different. Friday nights are my only night off. I take Friday nights off. That was it during football. No studying. Grab me a pizza and sit on TV and catch up on the shows I missed all week long. Saturdays, I would get up and I would work with recruiting with the football team. As a former Badger that played here and someone that played in the NFL, I think that when the recruits come in, you know, I understand the recruits that are coming from California and Pennsylvania and Florida. They're leaving home to a new environment, and it's important that they understand that they have a support system, that they have a family here. So it's funny. I tell people all the time when I sit down with the recruits, I don't talk about football. I talk about life. I talk about your life skills. I talk about your preparation. I talk about what it'll be like to be a student athlete, which you will have to face, which you will have to develop, how your time management will be your biggest asset, how being self-aware of who you are will make you successful in your 4 or 5 years here. Mm-hmm. We know you're talented. That's why you're here. I know you can play football, so let's talk about the things outside of football that are actually more important.
And then Sunday, is that another
Sunday day? Study day. Up at 10 a.m., I may watch a little bit of if it's a good Lions game. We've been struggling the last couple of years, but usually I usually study before the game, and then the game is usually my time off. And then once the game is over, I come over here to the facility, and I usually study till about 8 or 9 o'clock at night.
So you got to be torn tonight because the
Lions play Packers.
And the Lions play tonight.
So. Yes, they do. Yeah, so I have my hat with me. I'll be wearing it on campus today, but unfortunately, I'll be giving a presentation tonight of one of my papers, so I will not be able to see the game.
We talked about in undergrad how you weren't as socially active as perhaps you could have been.
Right.
How about now that you are here as a grad student?
Yeah, very active, very involved in the Patrick Sims, the head of our provost of a diversity, whether it was the diversity conferences, whether it was the Black Student Union, Madison Black Professionals, community service. We're going to the Children's Hospital this Friday. We're doing Toy for Tots next Wednesday. I think what I learned when I left is the community, everything is an opportunity. The community is an opportunity to not only grow as a person, but also have an opportunity to give back. Mm-hmm. I think when I look at my experience in the undergrad, not only did I not know what was going on in the community, but I think I was so concerned with making sure I had the grades and making sure I were successful on the football field. Like, that was my only focus. Not that those things were not important, but you're still figuring out who you are at 17. Mm-hmm. You're still figuring out how to navigate things. It doesn't happen overnight when you come to college that you actually automatically know who you are and where you want to go in life and what things are important. And I think these life lessons that I've had between my undergraduate experience and graduate experience has shown me that I love the community. I still love giving back, and that time management, which I didn't have when I was here the first time around, makes those things available for me to do.
So, is there anything else you want to say about your time back here now, mm-hmm. whether you're getting your undergrad degree or now being here in graduate school?
Right. I think that what we've saw here, I think for me, I don't look at diversity as color. I look at it as ideas. I think when I first came here, African Americans were a minority. We still are a minority. I think we have a lot more diversity and color on campus, but I think there's a lot of international diversity. I don't see more African Americans here than I did when I was here. And I think that's something that we need to change. And that's a bigger issue than UW. I mean, the school systems, the high school. I mean, you can't blame a kid who, I speak about this all the time, you may have a diamond in a rough. And for instance, the paper I'm speaking on tonight is how intercollegiate athletics can serve as a model of diversity for college campuses. And one of the things I think we do here is we have one goal. While we do operate in a silo at times, it's important to us to have diversity here. And you have no choice but to be diverse, because the guy sitting next to you could be from Green Bay, Wisconsin, and the guy sitting on the other side of you could be from Dallas, Texas, and the guy sitting on the bus with you can be from, you know, Oregon, can be from a different country depending on what sport you play. And you have an idea to have these social interactions with each other. And I think that when you see the athletes here, it's not cliquish. You don't see all the black guys hanging together. You don't see all the white guys hanging together. You don't see the Spanish or Asian. You just see all of them hanging together as athletes. And I think because we make that important, it's very successful here. While we still have work to do, it's very successful here. Wisconsin now has a diversity plan, that they 10-year diversity plan, mm-hmm. That they initiated last year, which is very important. I think we're doing a good job. But I think one thing in athletics that sets us apart is that with an athletic mindset, it's on to the next game. It's not we have 10 years to get better. It's if we lose a game, we have 7 days mm-hmm. to get better. Mm-hmm. And we make it important to take care of that. And also what I understand is you can have so many different groups on campus doing amazing things, and none of them know that they're doing the same thing. They have not. So what I imagine if all of that came together, if Bascom Hill came together with the diversity committee and admissions and make sure that we're doing the college bridge programs and retaining our students here. And not just athletes, just retainment is one of the toughest issues here. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying that these things are really happening in our communities. I think we're really taking a step towards righting the ship. You know, it's a saying, it takes a long time to turn around a cruise ship. You know, everything can't be a speedboat turn. You know, you have to have a lot of things in place. It takes a long time to turn a cruise ship around. And I think that's what we have to do. I think we're definitely on the right track. But I think because of the importance of it here, because we actually blend all these student-athletes together, and because of the Federation, they're always together, I would say that most athletes have a more diverse experience than the average students on campus.
Okay. Well, Sue, I think we're done.
So I appreciate it.
Thank you very much for your time. So this ends the oral history with Lamar Campbell. Thank you.
No, thank you.